Oregon Truck and Auto Authority is your tonneau cover source. Tonneau covers are a great way to secure and protect the cargo in your bed from the elements. Styles from Truck Gear, Mack Industries, Undercover, and more. Oregon Truck and Auto Authority, your one-stop accessory and protection shop.
A few days ago, you may have seen an article. I think it was reported in Oregon Live in the Willamette Week. It had to do with a jury trial or a decision that a jury had made. And what had happened is that there was a young woman who had earbuds plugged into her head, and she had a hoodie on, and she was walking across the train track, and she ended up being struck by a MAX train, severely injured. She lost, she lost part of a leg, and she needed a lot of work done on her. And, of course, we feel really badly about that. And I remember seeing that story at first and thinking, well, okay, she plugged earbuds in, she had a hoodie on, and she wasn't looking both ways before crossing the train track. So obviously, it's really her fault. Nope. The jury came out there and awarded her $18 million. I guess he ended up saying that, Max was partially responsible for it. It just didn't make sense to me. And I thought we've been having a problem in, or I thought that we've had problems in the jury trial system for quite some time. And I wanted to talk with Drury Sherrod, PhD. He's the co-founder of Mattson and Sherrod Incorporated. It's a jury research firm, and he's written a book about this. It's entitled The Jury Crisis, What's Wrong with Jury Trials and How We Can Save Them. Drury, it's great to have you on. Good morning.
Good morning, Bill. How are you?
I'm doing well. Now, Drury, jury consultant, does that mean you're kind of like that TV character on CBS, Bull? Is that kind of what you're about, you know, trying to see what and figure out what juries are going to do for various clients?
Bull is a pretty amped up version of what I do. What I do is much less glamorous and much more routine, mm-hmm. and probably much cheaper.
Oh, okay. All right. So the jury trial is very powerful, and it's something that I don't want to see fall by the wayside, Drury, because I look at the jury as the final bastion, the last hope when you have government that is overreaching for the people to be able to say no. You will not cross this line. It's the ability to say no to an overreaching government. It's kind of how I view the jury trial. How do you see it, and what are some of the problems we're facing these days?
I generally agree with you. It's the time when the people speak truth to power. When mm-hmm. in a criminal trial, the people can tell the state, you know, not to imprison, not to incarcerate, not to execute. And you can also tell in a civil trial, people tell corporations, you made an effective product, you owe punitive damages, you should pay someone $50 million. So the people, this is really the most fundamental tenet of democracy, I think.
So where have we gone wrong? What has changed between that fundamental time of a democratic representation, representative republic, to what we're looking at right now? And like I said, you know, $18 million for someone who was clearly negligent and hurt themselves, you know, and being paid for by the taxpayers. But a jury said, hey, well, you deserve this money, and off we go.
You know, it sounds like the McDonald's coffee trial. I almost never work with an attorney who doesn't mention McDonald's. Mm-hmm. That's 25 years ago, back when coffee cost 49 cents a cup. And in that case, the lady spilled coffee onto her lap, and the jurors awarded, I think, $270 million. But it turned out that what the case the jurors heard was that McDonald's actually sold their coffee at a higher temperature than most other franchises. The coffee was being served in junk, consumed in a moving environment, likely to spill.
Mm-hmm.
They had been sued 700 times for excessively hot beverages. So there was a little more to the story. But in that case, the jurors, I think, made a very quick decision and came back and decided that McDonald's was guilty. And it's an interesting case because it sounds like spilling coffee on yourself is such a common sense thing. And yet if you think that this is super hot coffee in a moving environment, maybe to a juror it sounds hazardous.
Yeah, but life is inherently hazardous. There are hazards that we're supposed to be able to reasonably deal with. Now, I know that woman, that elderly woman, who was horribly injured by spilling the coffee, you know, on herself. And I don't want to. Yeah, it's just horrible. But you know, when I heard that story, and from what I understand, the final award was knuckled down by later courts, wasn't it? Wasn't that eventually?
Yeah. I think finally they settled for $600,000, the two parties did.
Okay, yeah. And that sounds a little more like it. I get this, but what has gone wrong with our jury trials today in the United States of America, in your view? And, of course, one of the first problems that I would bring up is that I don't know if we're seeing all that many jury trials. It seems like the system is all set up to make sure that you don't go to a jury trial. Am I right or wrong about that?
Yeah, let me make 2 points. Right now, we're seeing jury trials shrivel on the vine. In terms of criminal trials, less than 1% of all the trials, all the cases filed in a year, less than 1% ever reach a jury. In civil trials, when people sue corporations or corporations sue each other, less than 0.5% of those in it filed in a year ever reach a jury. These are down from like 20%. It was never the majority, but 20 years ago, 20% above cases went to a jury.
Really?
Juries are disappearing. Yeah, it's often called the vanishing jury, the disappearing jury, the death of the jury. One reason is that whenever we sign a contract, for example, those little boxes when you click agree on your screen, or a cell phone contract, you basically agree in several places in those contracts in very dark, large print to waive your right to trial by jury, and you agree to binding arbitration. So most criminal cases these days are filed by plea bargaining, which we're seeing a lot of in the news.
Why do they do plea bargaining rather than a jury trial, and, you know, presenting evidence to the people so the people can actually, you know, a jury of your peers can actually make that judgment?
Because jurors are mistrusted. Jurors are ridiculed. Jurors, most people have the attitude that I think you might have, that jurors are crazy. They're out of control. They have runaway verdicts. And I think the reason we're going to find out why this happens is that we haven't respected the human brain. The jury trial came into being about 900 years ago in the Magna Carta, 1215. For 800 years, trials were very simple, very short. Almost no evidence was presented. Witnesses didn't show up. For the past 100 years, they've gotten successively more and more complicated. For example, that El Chapo trial. That was a three-month trial. Mm. The judge gave 3 hours of judge's instructions, which are very arcane and impenetrable. And then the jury debated for 7 days before they reached it. And that was a fairly high-profile, to us, seemingly easy-to-understand case. It was a narco guy who had a lot of people murdered and maybe did some himself.
Sure.
That was the allegation. But it's almost too much to expect of the human brain to say they're going to remember everything they heard for 3 months. Then they'll understand the judge's instructions for 3 hours and then reach a verdict. Cases have gotten actually too complicated. So what I think we should do is respect the human brain. Present cases in a way that's more like what the jurors understand evidence. The jurors turn things into a narrative or a story.
Hmm.
And that's how the brain evolved to work.
Yeah, it's interesting you brought up 3 hours of judges' instructions. Why do we even have judges' instructions? Because I really get concerned when I hear any judge, and I'm not saying that I'm for the defense or I'm for the state. I'm just saying when I hear any judges, well, essentially say, I'm going to explain the law to you, and then if it is this way, then you must convict. And I'm thinking to myself, no, that's not actually the power at all. I mean, the jury is there to make that decision irrelevant or, you know, regardless of what the judge says. Is that not the case? It always seems like it's designed to push conviction over anything else. Am I right or wrong about that?
Well, the distinction is the juror's job is to try facts. The
right.
judge's job is to explain the law. And, for example, in an auto defect case or an SUV rollover, there's always an allegation that the vehicle was unsafely designed because it was too tall, too narrow. And people think they can get away with all the driving maneuvers they get away with in a regular vehicle, and they can't.
Is part of the problem of the jury trial just the change of our societal attitudes from you have to be responsible for yourself, you got to be careful in your dealings, and then it seems like we have changed into, well, I got hurt, someone's got to pay. Is there any truth to that? It seems like a change of attitude from even when I was a kid.
I see what you're saying. I think a case can be made, though, and I believe it's pretty clear, that different people actually see the facts differently. For example, if you just take an auto defect case again, what is unreasonably dangerous? We've done a lot of research in our firm. And the people who see people appraise risk differently. So some people will say that's a really risky vehicle. The warnings ought to be much clearer and more vivid and displayed more prominently. and the kinds of people who have that profile, and this is getting back to kind of Dr. Bill,
mm-hmm.
people who have been badly injured, who fear injury, who feel they can't protect themselves, who feel that the world is out there to get them, you know, they actually see and appraise risk differently than somebody who thinks I'm in charge, I can take care of myself. So it's an interesting point. Like who's right? Is there a right or wrong? Are there just different ways to perceive risk and harm and injury and hazard and warnings?
And risk and harm and hazard is also, within that risk, harm, and hazard is also where liberty sometimes lies. It's like, I know it's not a good idea to smoke cigarettes, but you have the liberty to purchase something. And anybody with half a brain knew even back in the 1960s that smoking cigarettes wasn't good for you. Right? So I never quite agreed with the tobacco verdicts for that reason. But, you know, that's just you and me having a difference of opinion, I suppose. By the way, the book is The Jury Crisis: What's Wrong with Jury Trials and How We Can Save Them. Is another problem with the jury the fact that, well, you know how we joke about it, that the problem with the jury is that the people who are on the jury are the ones that were too dumb to find a way to get out of it.
Well, there's a lot of stuff, there's a lot of things underlying that statement there. It turns out that about 15% of people who receive jury don't receive a jury summons. So a jury summons is sent out. Either people have moved, didn't leave a forwarding address, they don't show up. The post office didn't check their address changes. Another 10 to 15% will not even respond. So that takes out almost a third of the people. Mm. Either they didn't get a summons or they ignored their summons. So, and those people tend to be extremes. They're either very poor people who move often, and they can't afford to show up because, what, they're an hourly wage and the court is going to pay them $15 to $25 for a day, and they have to get transportation and arrange for childcare and that sort of thing. So a lot of people just ignore their summons. And then of those who come, many judges are pretty liberal in allowing what's called cause strikes.
Yeah.
Someone who says, you know, I had a car like that once and it was a lemon and I just can't possibly be fair. Or also peremptory strikes, where courts allow maybe 6 to 12, maybe sometimes 15 peremptory strikes, where a lawyer can just say, you know, I'm going to strike this person, and they don't have to give a reason.
Yeah, I just have a feeling about this, so this person strikes. I have only been summoned to serve on a jury one time, and wouldn't you know, it was a time in which I was moving. And literally, I mean, I didn't see the notice until it was over, and so and that was sad. And I have not been summoned ever since. I've not received any of those things, and yet I've had, heck, my wife has been summoned 3-4 times within that same period. Is that also a part of the issue, that it's not really fair about how it's doled out there, some of the summons?
Different states use different databases. Some states only summon jurors from registered voters. Other states do driver's license. Other states do anybody who's had any form of any dealings with state benefits for state benefits, like under employment, that sort of thing. So a lot of people just... Well, like your wife, they don't get their summons because they're not in the database.
Very interesting. The book is The Jury Crisis: What's Wrong with Jury Trials and How We Can Save Them. What do you think are some reforms that might be done that could be helpful to increase the number of jury trials? Because I get concerned when I see plea bargain upon plea bargain upon plea bargain. It's not because I don't think that most of these people aren't guilty. But I would also add that the government's not that good. You know, I mean, as far as, you know, these brilliant crime fighting, a lot of times it's just because you'll cop a plea because you don't have the money, you can't fight it. And I've heard this, especially when people are dealing with the feds. That seems to happen more often than not. How could you right that balance of power in the criminal justice system, Drury? What do you think?
I think there's two things. One thing is jury selection, which we've talked about, to make sure that you're guaranteed a jury of your peers. Now, it's very hard to say who are peers in contemporary America. But to make sure that more people get summoned and fewer people are struck, so the jury looks more like the people in your community. The second thing, is to present information in a way that actually respects the brain instead of works against the brain. You know, back to El Chapo, if you have 3 months of testimony, 3 hours of instructions, the brain can't handle that. It's just going to wash over us. So there's so much evidence in psychology that the brain looks for narratives and stories. And lawyers seldom present a case as narratives or stories. They'll present it as, here's 100 points, you know, on a yellow pad. I'm just going to check them off. Oh. I'm going to bring in this witness today and this other witness tomorrow and another witness like next week. And you're telling the jurors, you're going to hear this from this witnesses. And they really have no idea why they're hearing that.
And so your eyes have glazed over by the time you're at the end of this. All right.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's the way the current system is. Could it also be that the law is just too darn complex? We already hear that ignorance of the law is no excuse, but yet half the time you'll talk with police officers and they don't even know what the law is. Because, I mean, how can any of us try to keep up with an administrative state that has grown as huge and overweening as this one that we currently live in the United States?
It turns out that actually jurors aren't very influenced by law. Most of half of what jurors talk about during deliberations are just events drawn from their own lives. It's called a stored script.
Really?
So when they hear about a case, they'll think about the case and they, well, something like that happened to me. And then they'll bring up this little story from their own life that vaguely relates to the case. And then they'll use their story to understand what happened. Because what jurors often have to do is the facts are unknown, unknowable. They have to fill in using common sense. So one person's common sense draws on a different sort of story from their lives than another person's common sense.
What would you think about this reform? And it's just something I've thought about. How about an actual professional jury, almost like a permanent professional grand jury of one sort or another? What would you think about something like that in which people were chosen from various walks of life and it actually was a job of sorts? Do you think that might be something which would be helpful?
You know, actually I don't, because there's lots of research on experts and how expert, for example, arbitrators, mediators, private judges, retired judges that companies can hire. It turns out that experts have the same human brains that jurors do.
Mm-hmm.
They have the same limited ability to cope with 3 months of information and 3 hours of judges' instructions. So experts really are no better. And I think unless it's just a job for experts, you might as well, I'd rather see the risk vested in 6 to 12 people than in 2 or 3 experts. For example, you know, if a group of 3 judges is hearing the facts of a case, they're going to be biased and they're going to be always talking about similar cases with each other. I would rather see the people decide on their own than experts or judges or mediators or arbitrators.
Okay, I see your point there, because I don't want the tyranny of the experts either, and I have viewed this. But perhaps maybe not experts in fields, but perhaps maybe that was a wrong way of putting it. How about people who are just judged to be reasonably intelligent, balanced people? Of course, I don't know how you end up coming with something like that.
Well, that's the goal that a jury should be, reasonably balanced, reasonably intelligent, you know. And
Have you stood in line at a grocery store recently, though? Would you want to be judged by the people in front of you? I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh at that. But that is both the challenge of the jury, the challenge. Well, you know, this is a big problem.
The extreme, that's going back to who gets their summons and who shows up. You know, that
right.
Really does take away a third of the people, and those who tend to be extremes, the poor and the wealthy, you know, the influential and the less influential, people who can afford to just ignore jury summons. And also, states don't enforce it. Some states actually, if you're pulled over for a traffic violation, it'll register in the police computer that you haven't showed up for your last 3 jury summons. And they can say, sir, I can arrest you for this. You know, you have to pay more attention to these jury summons.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Drury Sherrod once again. And the book, which I think raises an interesting question, The Jury Crisis, What's Wrong with Jury Trials, How We Can Save Them. So it sounds like the major part of your book, then, is we need to change the way we do these complex trials and make them more human-like in story. So this way people really get the full feel rather than just like, here's a bucket of facts. Good luck, jury. Is that kind of what I'm hearing from you?
Exactly the nut of the book. So you phrased it very well.
Okay, I appreciate that. All right.
Let's
talk with Paul from Williams. Paul is in Williams, and you have a question here on judges' instructions and jury rights. You're with Drury Sherrod.
Good morning. My understanding, what I've heard in the many times of the judges' instructions.
And by the way, Drury, Paul was a former law enforcement, so that's his background.
I worked law firm for a few years and got a little bit of schooling, but I'm no lawyer, but that's why I like to ask lawyers. When a judge gives the instructions, it seems to me in some cases it's tantamount to a directed verdict of guilty when you say you must. And I have information here. This is U.S. versus Doherty. The jury has an unreviewable and irreversible power to acquit in disregard of the instruction of the law given by the trial judge. And the Supreme Court in some cases, several cases, has said essentially the same thing. So if a jury, in spite of all that information and the evidence and the law, says not guilty, what's the punishment for the jury? And I said, there is no punishment, so therefore they must have that right.
I think you're right. You know, that is jury nullification. And then as the juror's job is to try the facts, and if in trying the facts they decide these facts just don't make sense, and so they actually have to supply the facts. And interestingly, if you go back to the Magna Carta 800, 900 years ago, juries were when, as Bill was saying, juries where when the people spoke truth to the king's officer would show up and have an allegation against the villager, and the people who didn't like, who didn't like the king would actually change the facts and decide, you know, that this infraction happened at a different time of day under different circumstances, and then and jury's leeway to try or define or supply facts. They do nullify facts. They can make up facts. But often cases are so unclear that I'm not sure what the juries would do otherwise, but make up facts.
All right. Very good, Paul. I appreciate your take on that. Drury, thanks so much for having joined us and bent the brain around a little bit on these issues, because I think a jury trial is a crown jewel of our system that seems to be getting buried and buried more and more. And like you had mentioned, only 1% of criminal trials right now go before a jury, and most of it goes to plea bargain. I know that makes it a lot easier for the government. I imagine it's cheaper, too. I mean, that's probably part of what's been driving this trend, isn't it? The fact that it's cheaper. But I don't know if it's necessarily better to do it that way.
I think a lot of judges see their job as managing a case toward settlement rather than managing a case toward trial.
Is that justice, though?
I wouldn't think so.
Mm-hmm. Drury, thanks so much for joining the show. And I want to get a copy of this book. Take a look at that. And by the way, is this available everywhere at this point? Where do you get it?
I'll order it through the Amazon, you know, Barnes & Noble, those kind of places. Mm-hmm. Or you can request it through your bookstore.
Very good. The Jury Crisis. What's wrong with jury trials and how we can save them. Thanks for joining us this morning. Be well.
Okay. Thanks, Bill. Bye.
731 KMED and KCMD on the Bill Myers Show.
Lars Larson here with a tip about friendship. Good friends are always looking out for your best interests. So if you have a friend who's frustrated with their home not selling, I have just what you need to be a good friend and look out for their best interests. Give them this number, 541-772-SOLD. That's the number for Jared Hokanson of Hokanson Realty. See, most agents begin marketing your home after they get your listing. Jared is different. He's been marketing to qualified buyers already. These buyers are just waiting for you to list. Jared can give you an immediate cash offer, or he can put his accelerated demand program into place that turns up the marketing and will get you the most money for the sale of your home. And that's why Barbara Corcoran from Shark Tank and I would only call Jared Hokanson in Medford and Southern Oregon. Help your friend out. Have them call Jared Hokanson, 541-772-SOLD. That's 541-772-SOLD. 541-772-SOLD.com. Your friends will thank you for it.
The best time to buy a boat is now. Waterworld Boat and Power Sport has preseason boat show prices on every boat and watercraft in stock, including arriving 2019s and remaining 18s. Tracker and Kingfisher, Access and Malibu, Wake Boats, Bayliner Runabouts, Sun Tracker Pontoon Boats, plus Sea-Doo and Yamaha Personal Watercraft, all at the lowest prices of the year. So hurry into Oregon's number one boat dealer, Waterworld Boat and Power Sport, on Crater Lake Highway in Medford. Visit waterworldmedford.com and rev up your weekend.
The Brittany Wright event benefiting St. Jude Children's Research Hospital is coming back for an amazing three-day encore event this October 11th through the 13th. We are so close to raising $1 million for St. Jude, and we've received so much love and encouragement from all of you that we're doing it one last time. Please join us this October for the 16th and final Brittany Wright event. Tickets go on sale June 1st. See you at the final Brittany Wright event.
All money managers might seem the same, but while some give their clients cookie-cutter portfolios, Fisher Investments tailors portfolios to your goals and needs. Some only call when they have something to sell. Fisher calls regularly, so you stay informed. And while some advisors are happy to earn commissions whether you do well or not, Fisher Investments fees are structured so we do better when you do better. In other words, we're on your side. Maybe that's why most of our clients come from other money managers. So if you're in or nearing retirement, talk with us and find out why investors are switching to and staying with Fisher Investments. Fisher Investments, clearly better money management. Investments in securities involve the risk of loss. Visit us at fisherinvestments.com to find out what we can do for you.
The news things you want to know.
Collusion between Donald Trump and the Russians.
These people are sick.
And all of a sudden...
We don't have the facts yet.
They're trying to take you out.
Proper investigation.
Going through all of the president's businesses.
The news.
I'm not running.
You need to know.
2020.
Stay in the know.
The president would take the national emergency route.
At least 10 Republican no votes.
Check in often.
Will I veto it?
100%.
This.
The devastating storms.
A level of destruction.
The town is gone.
Is 99.3 KCMD and FM 106.7 KMED. You're getting going with the Bill Meyer Show on 106.7 KMED and FM 99.3 KCMD. Call 541-770-5633. 770-KMED.
You like that riff, Shane?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I figured you would. Yeah, that's Monster Magnet.
I was going to say, that sounds like Monster Magnet.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to tell you, that could be a fun topic one morning. When it comes to music and maybe television shows and things like that, what is your guilty pleasure? What is your guilty pleasure? I'd love to talk with you about that. I think we could have some fun. My guilty pleasure, even though you look at my music collection, it's everything from Beethoven, Brahms, Celine Dion, to some of the hardest rock that you will find, and everything in between, to Hey, Hey, We're the Monkees. I mean, you know, it's just... Everything's in there, but my guilty pleasure is stoner rock, and that's what Monster Magnet is. I'm not a stoner, right?
Pretty much. That's what they are. But
I'm not a stoner.
Their music is great.
But I like stoner rock. I don't know what that is. And, you know, don't have any tats, nothing like that. Well, I don't imbibe in the weed, you know, that kind of thing. But yet stoner rock is, you know, had that name. It came up with it because that was sort of where they were coming from. I like the music. Oh, well. So what is your guilty pleasure? We could talk about that if you want.
I am a metalhead through and through. However,
how many Celine Dion albums do you have, though?
None.
You don't? I see. You have to broaden that.
Guilty pleasure, I will go ahead and admit it right here on the air.
Partridge Family.
It's actually my guilty pleasure is a K-pop group called Twice. K-pop? It's a girl group.
Really?
Korean pop.
Korean pop?
Yep.
No kidding.
I just adore them girls. I don't know why.
I look at you and I'm thinking to, you know, this big metal guy would not be into K-pop at all.
Yeah, I know. It's weird. I get a lot of guff for it.
So me, uptight sort of guy, you know, for the most part, you know, straight and narrow. So stoner rock is my guilty pleasure and Korean pop, girl pop is your guilty pleasure.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't follow the boy bands because, well,
I never cared about the boy.
I'm a guy.
Yeah, I'm with you too. All right. It's 7:36. Mr. X in the bunker. How the heck are you doing this morning, Ed? What's on your mind?
I got a kick out of your conversation with Kevin talking about the speed controls and all of the different things.
Volvo last hour. Our Volvo has put out a release in which they're going to put limits on their cars in 2021. Can't go faster than 112 miles an hour, and the cars will not be allowed to speed faster than the posted speed limit wherever it happens to go. It's all that's that whole connected car thing that we're discussing these days.
It brought me on a time trip back into the 70s, Bill, when the first oil crisis hit the country and they imposed a nationwide speed cap of 55 miles an hour.
Yep, remember it well.
And yeah, I remember driving, taking trips to Colorado and different things, but the reality came down to was there was a company that stood out and they had been running beef. It was called the Montford Meatpacking Company.
Did you say Montford? M-U-M?
Montfort.
Okay, Montfort Meat Company. Okay.
They had these marvelous trucks that were, you know, geared to run at high speeds because they were transporting beef for consumption from, you know, Colorado to New York, all over. But the left lane was known on the CB radio as the Montfort lane. And, you know,
because the Montfort lane, it was used by those trucks. They're always going fast, right? They're speeding the meat from market to market. And you have to do that to keep it fresh, right?
Well, this is where I'm going with this is understanding the relationship of limiting speed to commodities, to bringing product to market, to all of these things. When you look at the desire to limit this, what happens? Well, the Montfort company at that time, as I remember, as everything went, there was an energy violation, it was called. You didn't get points. There was no points issued. You just had to pay a fine if you were caught speeding. Well, the Montford company at that time was, you know, basically put out a thing that they would pay the tickets for the drivers if they got caught, but they were to maintain the policy of getting their product to market the fastest way. So it became known as the Montford Lane. And I just remember on one trip seeing they used to run convoys, but you see a convoy of these trucks coming up behind you, and there was other trucks mixed in with them that could keep up. But they would go by you at 90, 100 miles an hour.
No kidding. And so they would just pay the fine then as a cost of doing business to keep the meet going.
They would pay the fine.
Wow.
They would pay the fine. And it was, but it was, you know, you look at it, well, energy violation, no fine. Well, that led, I would imagine, to negotiations with states that they were running into. I don't know. But the reality to it is we have to think about the connected effects of any move into this, because you know, the freedom of transportation and travel is part of the inherent right of being a citizen of this country.
Well, you look at the Admission Act of Oregon. I was reading that again yesterday. You sent me a copy of it, and I sent it back to you reformatted. But yeah, I mean, even then they were talking about, you know, the right to use the rivers as the highways and all the rest of it.
Right.
And it was the right granted. I mean, for us to become a state,
right,
you have the right to travel there.
Well, and you have to remember, it goes all the way back to then, our road and traffic, you know, situation, all of our travel situation. The highway was a wagon trail or a foot trail that was considered the highway. And that was when the state became a state, it was disposed land. So now the effects of all of that, you know, long-term usage is if it's been in the public use for that long, it was disposed. So you look at this concept, and it was well thought out because you had a granted right to use those things. Mm. Now you look at, well, now we've had a time period of how many years that our trucks have been able to travel. Now we want to reduce that. We want to reduce the car speed. We want to reduce this. We want to limit this.
They want to deindustrialize. They want to reduce the carrying capacity for life itself in our area, and that's why we cannot consent to these intrusions, Mr. X, which is why you bring up all this issue about the carbon cap and trade and so much more. Okay.
Well, it was interesting when I was a young man, the speed limit in Montana, there was no posted speed limit on the highways, and it was the speed limit was safe and prudent for conditions existing.
So, yeah, but that would take judgment, right? And then you have the feds. And then the feds would get involved and say, well, we can't possibly have that. And if you want your grand stream funding, this is how that slow creeping of the administrative state has taken over a formerly relatively free people, depending on what state they were living in. Mr. X, thanks for sharing the story, okay?
All right, Bill.
All right. Fight the creeping administrative state. Fight the creeps in the administrative creep. Marty's in Shady Cove. Marty, what you thinking this morning?
Oh, I'm thinking that, it seems to me that once they banned cigarette advertising on TV, all of a sudden we had cancer. So I think we should return to advertising cigarettes on TV.
Okay.
My guilty pleasure is old school jazz from the 50s and 60s and soul music.
Really? What is your favorite old school jazz from the 1950s?
I'm discovering more and more since I started looking at YouTube. So it's a lot of our obscure players that didn't make it big or died of overdoses as junkies.
Well, that's true. I have some albums. One of them is like a compilation of a bunch of my favorite style, I'd have to say, is West Coast jazz. West Coast jazz of the 1950s, kind of that. You know, I'm a big fan of that style of jazz. Like, you know, Vince Guaraldi is an example. The guy that did all the music for Peanuts is an example. He was a West Coast jazz player.
Cast Your Fate to the Wind.
Yeah, Cast Your Fate to the Wind. And, yeah, everybody knows about the Charlie Brown themes, but he put out a lot of great music, that cool West Coast style with a little bit of boogie piano in it, too, that I've always loved that. Anyone come to your mind that... I mean, there's so much more to Vince Guaraldi than just Peanuts. I mean, if people are thinking of him as just the Charlie Brown theme, there's a lot more to it.
Well, yeah, in terms of pianists, there was Bill Evans.
Oh, Bill there Evans. Was... Oh, Bill Evans.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely astounding pianist. Bill Evans and Tony Bennett, when they got together. I have the collection of Bill Evans and Tony Bennett, the complete collection of everything they did together. An amazing vocalist with amazing piano. It's just the best. I'm right there with you.
Yeah, but Tony Bennett's pianist for decades was a guy named Ralph Sharon, mm-hmm. and they were together for decades. But yeah, Bill Evans, and I want to point something out about the cool jazz sound, how it came about with Miles Davis and Kind of Blue and all that.
Yeah,
is that these guys coming out of the hard bop era back in New York City and other areas, they could not get rehearsal spaces rented to them because they played too loud. So, consequently, guys learned how to play at a lower volume.
Oh.
And that is one of the reasons that, and Miles Davis in particular, and that's one of the reasons why you got that cool jazz sound that came about.
I did not know that, Marty. Thanks for sharing that story. It's a great story. It makes common sense. All right, we got to turn that stuff down, you crazy kids, right?
Well, yeah, because they would have those cutting sessions where they would play as loud as they could. And going back to Charlie Parker, I heard this thing about Charlie Parker, that the thing that really distinguished him from everybody else is that he could play louder than everybody else.
Because he
was a big man physically.
So, Marty,
I'll give you a couple names of guys you might want to check out.
All one right.
Blue Mitchell.
Okay.
And a guy named Tina Brooks. And, of course, there's Lee Morgan, who's a trumpet player, Freddie Hubbard. I've just been getting deeper and deeper into this, and there's so much great stuff that you'd never hear it until YouTube.
Marty, thank you so much for sharing your guilty pleasure, because now you're going to give me something else to explore. All right? Be well.
There you go.
All right, Marty from Shady Cove. 7:45. Ran a little long, but a good talk. That's what we do. 770-5633. Sergeant Jeff Prue, he's standing by. We'll get him on. And we're looking to catch a certain criminal for Crime Stoppers.
Now is a great time to improve your outdoor decking. Hughes Lumber has all the answers with TimberTech decking, railing, and deck lights. The highest quality decking products available, TimberTech decks are perfect for family events, barbecues, and outdoor relaxation. With a 25-year fade and stain warranty, you'll enjoy your deck for years to come. Hughes Lumber is extending their best price ever home show special on all TimberTech products. On Crater Lake Highway, 3 miles past Costco, Hughes Lumber. Go see for yourself.
A house would be easy to manage if it were just a box, but we cut holes in it. Doors, windows, we add things, change things. We heat it, illuminate it, take showers. So how do you get your home to work efficiently and save money? Simple. Just visit energytrust.org/myhome. Energy Trust of Oregon provides cash incentives and advice on using less energy or even making your own. All so you can get more from your energy.
Here's a look at your headlines from KMED and KCMD News. I'm Shane Michaels. First up, a White City man who was convicted of numerous sex crimes will spend almost 17 years in the slammer. Donald McLaughlin was sentenced yesterday morning, and upon release, he'll have to register as a sex offender and be under post-prison supervision for 100 months. In other news, the University of Oregon will get some federal funding to continue development of the Shake Alert Earthquake Warning System. $283,000 will go towards additional monitoring devices, while nearly $120,000 will be spent on research into regional seismic networks. In December, Oregon lost 1,700 jobs, but there was a big turnaround in January when 11,000 new jobs were created. Economist Nick Belaichik with the Oregon Department of Employment says the growth was widespread.
The five industries that saw the most job growth were manufacturing, construction, retail trade, professional and business services, and health care.
Oregon's unemployment rate remains at 4.3%. Oregon's job growth rate is 1.5%, which is slightly slower than earlier last year. And finally, it's official. The final Blockbuster video store on the entire planet is right up US 97 in Bend, Oregon. The only other one was in Perth, Australia, which reportedly closed its doors forever on Monday. And that's a look at your headlines from the KMED and KCMD Newsroom. I'm Shane Michaels.
This hour of the Bill Myers Show is proudly sponsored by Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros. Name brand tires and full service auto repair on Main Street in Phoenix. Time for new tires? Time to visit Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros. Hi, Katrina here to tell you we have great low prices on top name tire brands like Michelin, Continental, General, BF Goodrich, and Hercules. We have the tires you need, tires that will give you exceptional performance, handling, and year-round traction. Tires for any weather conditions. And don't forget the benefits of proper tire inflation, increased tire mileage, and fuel economy. We're your full-service automotive center. Come see us at Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros on Main Street in Phoenix.
Hi, this is Charlene at American Industrial Door. Colder weather can make springs snap and the rain makes jams swell and seals deteriorate. Lower temperatures can also make a garage door less flexible and put added strain on your door opener. Now is a good time to call American Industrial Door and have us service and adjust your door and opener to make sure it continues to provide safe and convenient operation. For garage door service and repair you can trust, count on your local expert for over 30 years. American Industrial Door in Central Point and now in Grants Pass.
We're here with Kevin from Clouser Drilling. Kevin, can you drill a well in the wintertime?
You bet. Winter can be a beneficial time to drill as most contractors are available. Many of our winter customers were planting gardens and need to be ready when spring comes.
Aren't those drill rigs pretty heavy?
They're very heavy. You need a good solid road base for drilling access, and this road can be an asset in future for maintenance of the well.
For a free written estimate, contact Clouser Drilling, C-L-O-U-S-E-R, at 541-476-7795.
If you own or manage a local business, you are a possible cyber threat target. Because all businesses, large and small, now face the risk of cyber breach. So do you know your liability if you have a breach? And are you aware of the latest cyber threats and ways to protect your business from them? On Friday, March 8th, Ward Insurance will answer these questions in a one-hour cybersecurity seminar right here in Medford that's free to local businesses. Call Ward Insurance in Medford or sign up online at wardinsurance.net.
Hi, I'm Christina from Lostman's Fine Eyewear. And I'm on 106.7 KMED.
The Bill Myers Show on 106.7 KMED and FM 99.3 KCMD. Call 541-770-5633. 770-KMED.
It's 7:50. Time for Crime Stoppers. And depending on the case and the information that you give, Crime Stoppers will pay a reward up to $1,000 for information that leads to the arrest and filing of charges. You can remain anonymous, and we thank the folks at Rogue Credit Union for making it all possible. Sergeant Jeff Prue from the Oregon State Police in studio this morning. And we're looking for someone who hurt a red-tailed hawk. What's the story there, Sergeant?
Good morning, Bill. Yeah, it was back around the middle of February 15th. Family brought this little red-tailed hawk into wildlife images. It was obviously injured, and part of their protocol is to do x-rays and figure out what was going on. And when they did,
took a couple of bullets, right?
Yeah, we found two bullets in this little bird, one in the neck, one in the wing. So they operated on it, got the bullets out, and the bird last report was doing well and will recover. But we're looking for the person, obviously. I'm not going on a limb here, but one bullet may be an accident, but two bullets, you're trying to injure or kill that bird.
Now, I'm not a hunter, so is a red-tailed hawk protected?
Yes.
Okay, so you're not allowed to hunt those then?
No.
Okay.
No.
Yeah, one bullet, an accident, two bullets, you were trying to take it down.
Yeah. So we're just asking the public. This was in the Grants Pass area. The bird was found, I believe it was the Elmer Nelson Lane area in Grants Pass.
Okay.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that that's where it was shot, because the bird was probably still flying or was able to get away. So it could be in that area. It might have been somewhere else. But we know that when people do these types of things, they talk about it. They share it with their buddy, their neighbor. Mm-hmm. And someone out there has information. And that's what we're asking, is the people, the public, to come to us, share that information. Call Crime Stoppers. We'll follow up on any lead we get.
All right. Very good. We have the information up on KMED.com. Sergeant, I'm just going to say that you answered this once before, all right? But every time you come on from the OSP, the questions there are, every time, I get probably five emails in there a week. How's the OSP going to deal with gun laws if they end up passing all this draconian stuff? And you're not even in patrol, so this is not something you're doing, I guess. But what is the rank and file? What is the actual policy? I mean, you do have to enforce the law, do you not?
Well, if it's the law, we're going to have to enforce the law. If, like I stated before, if we come across it, we'll have to handle it in that environment, that situation, depending on how the law is written and exactly how it is passed. Ultimately, the district attorney is the one who's going to determine whether or not they file charges on the subject. So could, with the law, I haven't seen it, the final version, how it's written.
And nothing's been passed yet. I mean, nothing's been passed. But there are just so many that are on the docket right now. One of them says, you know, 20 rounds of ammo a month. Another one says you can't have the standard capacity magazine. Another one says the AR-15 has to be registered. I mean, there's all this. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff coming.
Right. And it's up to the people. I mean, you know, we elect the our politicians, and if you're not in favor of it, then like you stated before, call your legislature, call your politicians, let them know how you feel.
Yeah, I get the impression that the OSP kind of put in a tough position on something like this because, you know, you live here, and yet the boss is technically the governor's office. Isn't that the case? Isn't that the chain of command, the way it works in this state?
Ultimately, the governor is our boss, and like I said, we will follow the law. We will do what we have to do. There are some laws out there that we find obscure, we don't understand, and they've been changed. So this is one that that is going to restrict people if passed. But we still, as law enforcement, not just the Oregon State Police, but all law enforcement in the state is going to have to follow that.
I could see the county stepping up here and getting a little antsy about what's going on, at least the counties in Southern Oregon. And I know you can't comment on that because you are apolitical. You can't, you know, break down the political stuff because otherwise, well, you wouldn't be a sergeant for very long. And I'm sorry, I'll say what nobody else could say, all right? That's the deal.
Okay.
All right. Appreciate you taking the question, but I want to let people know, he's on the record, they're going to enforce the law. That's what the law says.
That's what the law says.
This is what the law says.
If passed.
So our job, by the way, is going to be to work to make sure these laws don't get passed, okay? Sergeant, thank you for coming on and being a little bit on the hot seat here.
Thank you, Bill.
Even though you're just repeating what you said last time. And he'll probably say it next time, too. 7:55.
Shivering cold, lonely, and thirsty. Over 100 previously loved vehicles waiting for their forever homes. Don't let them wait any longer. Adopt your forever auto at Butler's previously loved adoption sale. Going on now in Medford at the corner of Crater Lake Avenue and Vilas Road. Adoptable autos starting as low as $39.95. Or how about payments of just $199 a month? Or get this, just $1 down gets you out the door on your good credit. Southern Oregon's best selection of previously loved, pre-owned, and used cars, trucks, and SUVs all in one place and ready to adopt today. It's Butler's previously loved adoption sale going on now at the corner of Vilas and Crater Lake in Medford.
105 Ford Escape, stock number 162104, price $39.95. 2016 Honda Elantra, stock number 141879, $199 a month for 72 months at 5.24 APR through RCU. OAC. Minimum credit score 720, no security deposit. See dealer for details. Does not include DMV or processing fee. Expires on 3/31/2019.
This is Herstal Jones of Jones & Associates Premier Financial Solutions. How much will you need to retire? Let us help you reach your retirement goals. Visit JonesFinancialTalk.com to schedule a complimentary strategy session. That's JonesFinancialTalk.com.
OregonEDeals.com makes it affordable to take a break from cooking. Save 30% on Texas Roadhouse, 35% on Paisanos in Rogue River, 40% on Diner 62, nearly half price on Papa Murphy's. And speaking of breaks, take the kids to Wildlife Safari on spring break and save over 50% on a family of four while they last. Shop OregonEDeals.com, presented by your Bi-Coastal Media radio stations.
I'm hooked on OregonEDeals.com. I'm saving big.
Listen every Monday and Friday morning during the Bill Meyer Show to the Outdoor Report on KMED and KCMD, keeping you up to date with recreational opportunities all over the region. The Outdoor Report is powered by Waterworld Boat and Power Sport, Oregon's number one boat dealer on Crater Lake Highway.
The fight.
This is our future.
This is not a political game.
This is what's happening.
This is not an emergency.
This is constitutional.
This is what matters.
This is a witch hunt.
This is far from over.
This is hell.
This is history.
This is an historic decision.
This is because of the 2020 election.
This is the time.
This is the new climate democracy.
This is the lie.
This is the place.
This is getting downright silly.
This is everything.
This is where we live.
This is our city.
This is KMED and KCMD.
This is our life.
Never miss the Bill Meyer Show. Download recent podcasts at BillMeyerShow.com or KMED.com. Brought to you by Oregon Truck and Auto Authority, driven by Linux on Airway Drive off Vilas.
7:58. Yeah, every time I have a law enforcement individual on, and that's the one main question that comes on. What are you going to do about the guns? What are you going to do about the gun laws? I think part of this is going to be approaching our counties, friends, but also doing everything possible to not have these laws pass. Because they're acting as if this is just a fait accompli. Well, I don't think carbon cap and trade is a fait accompli. I don't think, the gun bans that they're discussing right now are necessarily fait accompli. I want to give you a heads up that we're going to be getting together at the Roxy Ann Grange again a week from tomorrow. So it's going to be a week from tomorrow. And Mr. X and I and others are going to be joining us. And I'm hoping to get the Second Amendment community, which should be all of us, out to talk about strategy. It's going to be another one of these meetings that we're going to have at the Roxy Ann Grange, just like we did with the Yellow Vest meeting. In fact, I think I'm just going to wear the Yellow Vest again a week from tomorrow at Roxy Ann Grange. We'll have more details on this as soon as we get it booked up. I think it's really important to have this conversation. They need to know that, no, we do not consent. And OSP, other law enforcement agencies being put in a tough spot. There is what these individuals believe on their own. And then there is what is policy in the law. Well, we have to make sure these laws don't get passed. Shay, before 8, KMED Medford, KCMD Grants Pass News. Next, more your calls. It's an hour of open phones, 770-5633.